Rusty Quill presents The Magnus Archives.
Episode 110, Creature Feature.
Martin Blackwood, archival assistant at the Magnus Institute, recording statement number 0121403. Statement of Alexia Crawley, given March 14th, 2012. Statement begins. It's hard to put my relationship with Dexter Banks into words. It was a complicated thing, built on well over a decade of disdain and interdependence. In many ways, I was closer to him than his wife. Not that I ever touched the odious little freak, and while those film obsessives that insist I basically directed all his films do us both a disservice, it is true that without me he would never have reached the fame and high regard he enjoys. Enjoyed. Cinematographer. Such an ornate term, yet still so vague. I often wonder if that's to blame for how overlooked we are as a profession. Or even worse, that dry title, Director of Photography. But we are the true artists. A director may quite literally call the shots, but it is the cinematographer that makes them. We choose the angles, the lighting, pretty much everything that you see on the screen. If the camera is a brush, then we are the hand, the arm, the eye. The director's basically just the mouth, making pointless noise while the hand does the actual work. Almost every famous director that you know with a distinctive visual style has simply managed to lock down a talented DOP. I first worked with Dexter back in 1997, working as a cinematographer on Red Ronin. It feels odd to say now, but I was genuinely excited to work with him at the time. I'd seen some of his earlier work, Wasteland 7, Dolores, maybe a couple of shorts, and I remember thinking how refreshing it was going to be, working with a director who really got film. Who was steeped in their history and drew inspiration from forgotten corners of the medium. Even some corners that should have stayed forgotten. Unfortunately, that turned out to be the only thing he understood. You see, Dexter Banks lived movies. As far as I could tell, every single aspect of his life had revolved around them. His dad had owned a small cinema near Fairfax Avenue, and as a teenager he'd bounced between working there and a small rental store that specialised in foreign films. Specifically Italian horror movies and East Asian martial arts. I never met anyone who knew as much about films and as little about anything else. Working with him, it soon became clear that all he was interested in doing was recreating things he had seen, taking scenes and music that he loved from those old, obscure corners of cinema, and then constructing whatever patchwork narrative would allow him to shoot his own versions of them. Whatever dialogue he didn't repurpose and had to write himself was stilted and slow, trying to mirror the stylization that surrounded it, but failing utterly. I once mentioned to him the idea of working with a writer. I didn't do it again. Red Ronin, for instance, was based on a Japanese film from the early 70s called Blade of the Avenger. It hit on the same dynamics and scenes as the original, but was set in modern-day Arizona, following a nihilistic ex-marine in the fictional town of Funnel. It wasn't strictly a remake, though, because Dexter would constantly call me into the screening room to show me some other samurai or western that I'd never heard of, before jumping up at the appropriate scene and shouting, "That was it! We do that!" And I did. I'm very good at my job. I've been doing it almost 30 years now, five at the BBC before crossing the Atlantic, and I know exactly what I'm doing. Turned out that I have a talent for capturing the feeling of older movies, mirroring them whilst still keeping the shots fresh. Who cares if it bored me to creative tears? It was exactly the sort of bull that critics love, and Red Ronin was the first of Dexter's film to get an Oscar nomination, though it ended up losing out to The English Patient. Not really surprising, it was too genre for the Academy anyway. I didn't realise it, but by that point I was already locked in with Dexter. I'd held some ambitions about directing myself one day, but it soon became obvious that that wasn't going to happen. Maybe if I'd got a feature under my belt before I was outed as trans, it might have been different, but as it was, that revelation burned too many bridges, and when the dust had settled, it was made abundantly clear to me that I was never going to get a movie of my own. And it was either cinematography or nothing. So I stayed. I was in a bad place for the next couple of years, and blindly accepted the DOP position on two more of Dexter's films, Hell's Company and Leroy Slake. Both were big hits, and by the time I properly felt myself again, I had ended up with my career so tied up in Dexter's that chasing other gigs wasn't really an option. I still have no idea how intentional it was on his part, but he was definitely aware that it was my work that elevated his films above simple homage. His periodic bouts of petty jealousy and snide bitterness had made that abundantly clear. 5 years and three movies in, it was clear that we needed each other almost as much as we hated each other. I don't know when he first mentioned his spider film. It didn't bubble out into a full obsession until 2 years ago, but I know he'd talked about it plenty before that. Whenever arguments over a project would last late into the night, and if he was very drunk, he'd get kind of quiet and then he'd ask me, yet again, if I'd ever seen Kumo ga Tabete Iru. I think that was the name anyway, something like that. He was normally slurring quite badly when he said it. He thought it translated to the spiders that devour, but a Japanese friend once told me it was actually closer to just spiders are eating. According to Dexter, Kumo was an old tokusatsu movie which he believed had come out some time in the mid to late 60s. It was about a spider, just the one despite the title, that grew to a colossal size and terrorised a small unnamed island off the coast of Kagoshima. What struck him about it, though, was the utter absence of anything resembling a hero or protagonist. No one fought against the monster. And although there were vignettes in the lives of those under the spider's shadow, they all ended the exact same way, with the character in question marching slowly and calmly into its waiting jaws. Whenever Dexter described this, his eyes would widen and he'd start trying to recreate the sound that they made as they were eaten. He always claimed he wasn't doing it right, but the noises he ended up making were unsettling enough. As far as either of us could determine, the film never existed. At least, not in any form that left a traceable record. Dexter had folded it up in a lot more detail than I had ever bothered to, and had checked with collectors of obscure film paraphernalia and long-defunct Japanese production studios. He actually showed a pretty surprising aptitude for the language, but it was just dead end after dead end. I ended up watching half a dozen different giant spider movies with him over our time together, and none of them were right. He'd just watch, muttering under his breath, "No, no, no," and chewing on the back of his thumb. It wasn't something I ever really minded.